It's Monday, the 18th of May, 2026, and I want to start this one by acknowledging that the weekend gap leaves today's coverage stitched together from two full days rather than one. A Sunday is dark in this rotation, so I've been catching up on what landed late Friday and over the weekend. And I want to walk you through four pieces that I keep coming back to. Today reads less like a single dominant story and more like a research side conversation, finally catching up to the months of model release news that have dominated the headlines. It's a long form day. Three of the four pieces are essays. Let's get into them. First up is the latest Open Artifacts Roundup from Nathan Lambert at Interconnects. This is the 21st installment in the series, and it compresses one of the densest months of open weight releases on record into a single read-through. Google shipped Gemma 4 in sizes from 1 billion up to 27 billion parameters, plus a 35 billion, a 3 billion mixture of experts variant. DeepSeek released V4 in Flash and Pro tiers, with both reasoning and non-reasoning modes. The previously dominant V3.2 has been retired from the API. Moonshot's Kimi K 2.6 reasserts itself near the top of the Open Intelligence Index leaderboards. Xiaomi's Mimo 2.5 Pro lands its first credible benchmark, showing. Zhipu's GLM 5.1 makes a quiet jump on agentic coding. Alibaba's Quen 3.6 Max Preview now sits in the same tier as proprietary Frontier. Five Frontier tier open releases in a single month. That cadence alone is a story. But the longest section of Lambert's piece is on the new Center for AI Standards and Innovation, CAISI, Evaluation of DeepSeek V4 Pro. CAISI is the post-NIST American body that's been evaluating open models and their risks for the past 2 years. For V4, they used 9 benchmarks across cyber, biosecurity, chemistry, agentic coding, and reasoning, and calibrated those benchmarks via item response theory to produce a single ELO rating per model. Their headline claim, which the press has been running with all week, is that the aggregate capability gap between the strongest American closed frontier models, GPT-L 5.5, Claude Opus 4.7, Gemini 3.1 Pro, and the strongest publicly released People's Republic of China models is now wider than at the V3 evaluation a year ago, despite each individual PRC release closing some axes. Lambert reads this as evidence that the closed labs are pulling away on agentic and long horizon tasks specifically, while open weights remain competitive on contained reasoning benchmarks. He pushes back mildly on the framing. He points out that the item response theory aggregation, while methodologically clean, visually compresses real differences on several specific domains, long context reasoning, coding, multilingual. The PRC frontier is within noise of the American frontier, and the gap is concentrated in the small set of evaluations that CAISI weights most heavily, several of which are CAISI's own knowledge probes. What I take away from the piece is that the open weight ecosystem is now releasing at proprietary lab cadence, but the headline benchmarks that policymakers are reading from suggest the closed labs are widening their lead on the work that matters for economic deployment. Whichever read you take, the data point is now in the policy conversation, and it's going to drive export control and procurement debates for the next quarter. Moving on to our second story, which is a technical read-through from Sebastian Raschka at Ahead of AI. Raschka's monthly architecture piece takes the same set of recent open weight releases. Gemma 4, Laguna XS 0.2, Zaya 1 at 8 billion, DeepSeek V4, and looks at the architectural choices they share. His framing is that reasoning models and agent workflows now keep tokens around for many turns, so the binding constraints at inference are no longer parameter count or floating point operations. They are key value, cache size, memory traffic, and attention compute. And the labs have converged on a small set of architectural levers to attack those constraints. Gemma 4 introduces key value sharing across consecutive transformer blocks. Rather than each layer storing its own keys and values, every other layer reuses the previous layer's projections. That cuts cache footprint nearly in half, with what Google reports as roughly a 3/10 of a point degradation on its internal evaluation suite. Gemma 4 also adds per-layer embeddings, a small change that gives each block a learned residual offset and recovers about half of that degradation. Laguna XS 0.2 takes a different cut. It sets a global token budget for attention, and then has each layer choose how much of that budget to spend, with low-level layers attending to short local windows and middle layers attending more globally. Layers compete for the budget at training time via a learned gating signal. Xayah 1 at 8 billion keeps full per-layer attention but compresses the key-value projections through a small, convolutional bottleneck before caching, trading a fixed multiply ad per token for substantially smaller cache. And DeepSeek V4 combines what they're calling multi-head compression. Multiple attention heads share compressed key projections via a low-rank factorization, with a compressed attention path that downsamples distant tokens into a coarse summary before they're attended to. Roshka draws the diagrams for each and notes the recurring trade-off. Cache savings cost a small amount of long context accuracy, recoverable through some combination of architectural compensation and post-training. The field, he argues, has effectively settled on more compute per token, less memory per token, as the new optimization target. He flags one open question for the next few months: whether these efficiency tricks compose stacking key value sharing, multi-head compression, and compressed attention naively in the same model has not yet been published as working. The labs are picking one or two and stopping there. If you read one technical piece this week, this is the one. Third up is Dwarkesh Patel's essay arguing that reinforcement learning from verifiable rewards might be disproportionately bad at science. This is one of the threads from his recent interview with Michael Nielsen, written up as a standalone post on the Dwarkesh Substack. The standard story goes like this: coding and math are exploding because the verification loop is tight, and you can do reinforcement learning from verifiable rewards on those loops. Science is also verifiable, therefore science should explode too. Patel's argument is that the story falls apart when you look at how scientific theories actually get verified historically. Aristarchus proposed heliocentrism in the 2nd century before the Common Era. The cleanest test of his model, the stellar parallax, wasn't measured until 1838 by Bessel. Copernicus's 1543 model was actually less accurate than Ptolemy's millennia of accumulated epicycles, because Copernicus rejected the equant trick on Platonic grounds and had to add more circles to compensate. The Brahe model, with the Sun orbiting the Earth and the other planets orbiting the Sun, predicted the phases of Venus and required retrograde motion as a natural consequence, so a naive falsificationist couldn't have ruled it out either. It took roughly three centuries of accumulated indirect evidence to dethrone Brahe. The symmetric failure case Patel emphasizes is Le Verrier's prediction of the planet Vulcan to explain Mercury's anomalous precession. Le Verrier had successfully predicted Neptune from Uranus's orbital anomalies, applied the same method to Mercury, and got the wrong answer. The actual resolution of Mercury's precession required Einstein's general relativity in 1915, an entirely new theoretical framework rather than another perturbing body. Patel's claim is that the heuristic scientists use to make progress faster than naive falsification. Copernicus's appeal to parsimony, Einstein's appeal to covariance, the willingness to backseat empirical disconfirmation in favor of theoretical elegance, are neither articulated explicitly enough to put in a reinforcement learning loop, nor naturally rewarded by the loop structure. Reinforcement learning from verifiable rewards optimizes for verifiable answers on short horizons. The scientific judgment that lets a community accept Copernicus in 1610 without parallax measurements is the opposite kind of cognition. If Patel is right, the artificial intelligence capability arc looks very different across domains. Code, math, and bounded engineering will continue compounding. The kind of theoretical scientific judgment that produced general relativity may compound much more slowly under the current paradigm, regardless of model scale. It's a sharp essay, and it lands at a moment when the field is starting to ask whether the post-training methods that worked for coding agents will transfer to genuinely open-ended research. And for our fourth and final story today, also from Dwarkesh, but a very different kind of piece, this is a notebook from a recent conversation with a pre-training engineer, organized around the two failure modes that account for most of the visible, underwhelming launch stories of the past 2 years: causality breaks and bias accumulation. The expert routing discussion is the media section. In token choice routing, you read the router scores from each token's perspective and send each token to its top K experts. That's causal, but can leave experts with wildly unbalanced loads. In expert choice routing, you let each expert pick the top K tokens at once, which load balances cleanly, but breaks causality, because which expert token N gets sent to now depends on the router scores of token N plus K, information the model would never see at inference time. The conversation flags this as the rumored explanation for Llama 4's underwhelming benchmarks. Meta's mixture of experts was reportedly trained with expert choice routing, then served with token choice routing, and the train serve gap showed up as systematic capability loss. Token dropping is the other causality breaking pattern. An expert at capacity drops some of its assigned tokens, and which tokens get dropped depends on global batch composition rather than the causal stream. Patel attributes a similar problem to Gemini 2 Pro. The bias section is the one I keep thinking about. Patel describes the original GPT-4 training stall as a floating point 16 on Collective's bug. Floating point 16's Mantissa carves intervals logarithmically, so above 1024, the granularity is wider than 1, meaning a sum like 1 plus 1 plus 1 done in floating point 16 stops accumulating around 1024, because each subsequent plus 1 rounds back to the existing value. Run that through an all reduce and gradients get systematically biased towards 0, with the bug invisible per step, but compounding over weeks. OB, the post closes with a meta question Patel found striking. Are there a finite number of discrete failure modes? Numerics, mixture of experts routing, key value cache aliasing, optimizer instability, data loader race conditions that labs eventually patch and never see again? Or does each new scale produce a new bespoke failure mode? His interlocutor's answer was that it has been the second pattern so far. Each generation surfaces new pathologies that nobody anticipated. That's a quietly bearish read on the standard scaling story, and a useful counterpoint to the lab announcements that present each new generation as a smooth extension of the last. So that's our four. Stepping back across all of them, today's stories all push in the same direction. The first piece tells us the model layer is concentrating on the closed labs, even as the open releases speed up. The second tells us how the architecture is changing to support longer sessions and more agentic use. The third tells us the post-training paradigm that's working so well for coding may not transfer to science. The fourth tells us pre-training itself is still a precarious operation, full of bespoke failure modes at every scale. Together, they paint a picture of a field that is moving very fast on engineering and very slowly on the underlying questions. If you have time to read just one, make it Roshka's architecture piece. If you have time for two, add Patel's essay on reinforcement learning and science. The full digest has 37 more items, including a tight cluster of Hugging Face daily papers on multimodal skills, dexterous manipulation benchmarks, exploration in reinforcement learning from verifiable rewards, and several pieces on the architecture of the week from the Chinese labs. I'll be back tomorrow with whatever Monday's news cycle brings. Until then, keep reading papers. Keep noticing the gap between benchmark numbers and real deployment, and take care of yourself.